So you had trouble this week? Well, yeah, we're not dealing with umpteen 85 mile an hour wind, air conditioning. Yes, we do have lots of things. Now, see, you all wouldn't call this trouble, but it's a matter of perspective. I have a lot of students who aren't in class because their families told them, and you know, I mean, and technically, I can't do anything about that. And so technically, we're in school. Technically, they're not there. They're missing class, but I'm supposed to work with them and not and understand. And I get that. I understand because it's a hardship for many of them. But then you have the other unmeasurable group, which is seeing this just as an opportunity. And so to have to tell them, I know it's trouble, but we have things that wherever you are, you need to get to this and try this and do this. Because how many people and run into them? No, their parents are telling them to go and leave. So when you get there, you need to use your computers and do the stuff that we've been talking about. Because the other day I told you everything you need to do up till Monday. I guarantee you that I'm going to have at least one, probably multiple, of those students that will tell me that their trouble is they could not get a ride back to Savannah. So once they got to wherever they went, they could not get back to Savannah because it's no longer a weekend. It's for whatever reason. And there are those that for many of them, that is a real, just part of life. You know, you can't parcel them out the way you want to. I understand that. But it's trouble. Now, it's trouble for them and it's trouble for me because somehow I have to figure out how to keep us all, how do you keep the ship moving in the right direction and moving? And yet you got to accommodate that. And it really puts a huge mountain in the middle of whatever plan you have. Because, you know, you have so many things you got to get done, right? Now, you all ever feel like that? There's things you got to get done and something gets in the way and you still know you've got to get it done, but it's going to be very inconvenient. Sometimes those things are the trouble we have. All right. So today, when we look at chapter 10, we're going to see, we'll make fun of the guy. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't do that. But we're going to hear what Zophar says to Job. Job, you know, we had two chapters of Job kind of being honest about how he felt, but yet making some pretty firm statements about, you know, who God is and the way he is and struggling with understanding from his perspective what God's doing. And yet he is honest. He's held to his integrity and said, look, it's not, I didn't do anything that God would squash me for. So, you know, he's trying to tell him, look, this is not the issue. Well, we look at what we're going to have in chapter 10. And the reason you got to go there is because we don't have the screen. So in chapter 10, when you look at what Zophar says this. And you got to read attitude in this, okay? So it says, then Zophar, the Namathite, Job 10:1. Is that not it? Really? What is it then? What? Look at 11. What's 11? That's it. We're going to go to 11 then. Because Job has said the same thing for three chapters. Yeah, right. So far, so good. I got it. And if I had opened my Bible, I would have known that, wouldn't it? So I guess I ought to open my Bible and stop going with what I did, because what I did is not helping me. All right. There we go. Yep. Okay. So we're going to get Zophar and see what kind of attitude he's got. And verse 11. So then Zophar, the Namathite, replied, are all these words to go unanswered? Is this talker to be vindicated? Now, who's he talking about? Okay. Will your idle talk reduce others to silence? So who's he saying is idly speaking? Whose idle talk is he talking about? His idle talk will silence who? Larry Cohen, Larry, Joe, and Curly. Okay. Also known as Zophar, Bildad, and Elihu. Okay, that's right. And he says, will no one rebuke you when you mock? Now here's the question. What is Zophar's attitude at this point? You know, Job is pouring out his heart. He is struggling with all this stuff. He's struggling with what these three friends say. He's struggling with the fact that he's sick. And he's lost just about everything except his life and his wife who's madder than stuff at him. Yeah. Because everybody knows this is how it works. So I think there is a biting tone, and yes, it's condescending, and it's veiled but not so veiled. Okay? I mean, think about it. If I was standing in front of you and said, the person who just talked said this in this way. Well, who am I talking? I mean, there's no secret. You know who I'm talking about. It's just them four chickens. And yet, here Zophar is launching into the, is this talker to be vindicated? I mean, come on. Will your idle talk reduce others to silence? In other words, all this stuff that you're saying that sounds good, is that going to shut us up? Will no one rebuke you when you mock? Do you see? Man, have you felt like Job was mocking anybody? So why might Zophar think or interpret Job as mocking? Okay? Insecurity, perhaps? What else? Job will not sign off on the Mickey Mouse pledge. These guys are espousing a line that they have heard and been taught, and that is quite frankly problematic. And Job is dealing with the complexity of the situation, and yet these three, and here Zophar he is the king of simplistic. I mean, at least Bildad and Elihu, they came, Eliphaz and Bildad came up with some things that maybe would cause Job to have to think a little bit. Not Zophar. No. Okay. So he goes on to say, you say to God, my beliefs are flawless. Now, did Job ever say that his beliefs are flawless? So it's not an accurate way to reflect what Job has said. If anything, Job's dealt with the complexity of what he's facing. And I am pure in your sight. Did Job ever say that he was pure in God's sight? What he said was, I've done nothing that would have brought this on. My conscience is clear before God. Oh, how I wish that God would speak, that he would open his lips against you and disclose to you the secrets of wisdom. For true wisdom has two sides. Okay, so Job didn't claim to be perfect. He did claim to be blameless in terms of what all this was going on. That's right. Nothing he could put his finger on. So what do you think Zophar meant when he talks about this wisdom has two sides? You got any ideas, any thoughts about that? Because it does seem to be a little bit kind of like secret speak, you know what I mean? Well, good. We're going to walk there a little. Wisdom has two sides. Okay? That sort of makes sense in the context. Because I think that you may be able to what I'm going to try to explain, that may be a good illustration. The statement seems to say that while we may know things that are true, there's a depth below them, beneath them, that is even more true. And that it seems true on one level, but it may be different on another level. Yes. Now, for those of us who want to jump towards the New Testament, it may be sort of a Gnostic kind of attitude in that I know the secret handshake, I know all the right information, therefore I understand God better than you. You know, maybe one day you'll get to learn the handshake and maybe you'll be in the club. Okay. There is sort of that attitude here about who really knows. Job, what you're saying sounds good on this level. But really, Job, if you go down deep, you'll find that I'm right. Okay. Or that we're right. You know, but you're just not getting there, Job. You know, you set yourself up as this guy that knows a lot and is wise and has, you know, experienced a lot of success and good things have gone good in life. But here you are in the middle of this and you must not know as much as you really thought you did. Something along that line seems to be what Zophar is insinuating here. Oh, they're entrenched in their idea that they know what's going on. Now, this is an odd statement. And this is one of those things that we have struggles whenever Zophar says, you know, you're saying to God, my beliefs are flawless, I am perfect in your sight, which is not a true characterization. We've already said that. Oh, how I wish, then Zophar says, oh, how I wish that God would speak and open his lips against you and disclose to you the secrets of wisdom. In other words, you're not as smart as you thought, Job, because you don't know why you're in the middle of this. After that, he says, know this, God has even forgotten some of your sin. See, I'll tell you, you're such a bad sinner, he's even forgotten some of your sin. Now, the funny thing is, what do you think about that statement? So when he says that God has forgiven some of Job's sin, is that accurate? You don't think so? Okay, I understand what you're saying. I think the reality is, Job is a guy that God, he holds him up kind of like, when you think about the way that God felt about David, in a sense, Job is sort of like on that path. Okay, he's one of those guys that God said, man, he's one of my all-stars. And the reason why is not because he's perfect, it's because he honors God. And he has integrity. And so this is all this big test of his integrity. Reputation is not that important, but integrity is very important. So the truth is, this statement, God has probably forgotten your stuff, okay, is that God has chosen not to hold his stuff against him because God knows his heart and his integrity, right? Would we say that that's probably true? Okay. So, there's always a twist in what these guys say, okay? And so, to some degree, he's kind of right, but he's not really right. God is capable of putting aside anything that, and probably had put aside stuff that Job had done because he knew Job's heart. The same way he counted Abraham's faith as righteous. Mean kind of extreme thought. And again, Job and Abraham were somewhat contemporaneous with each other, if we believe what documents tell us. All right. So we go to verse 7. And in verse 7, he says, can you fathom the mysteries of God? Can you probe the limits of the Almighty? Well, could he? Nope. Nobody can, right? So do you think that Job is really trying to do that? Zophar goes on and says, they are higher than the heavens above. What can you do? They are deeper than the depths below. What can you know? Their measure is longer than the earth and wider than the sea. So, is Zophar right? There are people that you and I have dealt with and will deal with in life who have the same accusation against people who are... Let's take a step to the side for a second. Job never claimed to know everything. But God claimed that Job knew him and knew him well. That there was a relationship there. So Job must have pursued God to a point where God was pleased with Job's faith and with his pursuit of him. That's why he would say, hey, have you seen him? But at the same time, that's exactly right. What Zophar said is, none of us can know that. And Job is not saying that he can know that. So the two things can be true at the same time. We can be people of faith without knowing everything. So whenever we get accused, or a person of faith gets accused, we have to remember that people who are looking at it from that angle are looking at it with a agenda. They really don't want to know that. What the argument goes something like this. You can't know anything about God because you can't know everything about God. That's the argument. And you can't know anything about God. You fill in the blank. That's right. But especially when it comes to faith and God, that's the accusation. It's intended to deflate the idea of an authentic faith. Because total knowledge is never our place. And if we can remember that, then we will not have a hiccup when we have the scoffers. Does that make sense? Because it can be, have you ever had to be in a real argument with somebody? And as they talk to you and they say things like this to you, you've already bit into and you've engaged in not just the debate, but it's turned into, and then they'll say something like, and you just kind of feel the flush come over you. Okay? I've been there, not lately, but yeah, I've been there. I don't bite as much as I used to. I stay away from the buffet of disagreement a lot more. There have been times where I did, and it just comes washing over me. I feel a flush, and it's like, and it's because it didn't do any good to get in the argument in the first place. So here we have Zophar with that same kind of attitude. Okay, you know, he's making these accusations of Job, essentially taking that Job, you're saying all these things, and he misinterprets what Job is saying altogether. So Zophar continues in verse 10. He says, if he, meaning God, comes along and confines you in prison and convenes a court, who can oppose him? Well, obviously, the answer would be nobody. But that's also not an accurate description of what's going on. And Zophar is painting it like that because he's saying, I know. Because things are the way that I think they are. Then he says, surely he recognizes deceivers. Now, that if that's not a veiled statement, I don't know what is. Again, we have four people in one place. Three of them are here and one of them's here. And who's the deceiver, folks? That's right. Can't fess up. And when he sees evil, does he not take note? But the witless, woo, can no more become wise than a wild donkey's colt can be born human. I got a feeling that wild donkey's colt weren't what he really said. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's all because Job won't sign on to the Mickey Mouse pledge. He won't see it in the shallow way that Zophar wants to see the situation. Because, well, you tell me. Why does Zophar do that? And if you don't say that he's right, what does that mean? What happens if Job holds to his integrity and other people listen to Job? So one thing that we want to make sure we pay attention to in the world that we live in, as we deal with and we try to build a theology of trouble, is those people that draw lines and make ultimatums. Because that's essentially what these three were doing. And, you know, sometimes it has to do with control. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, like Heidi said earlier, their self-worth, okay, being involved, okay. You know, I'm a person who says who I am in Christ essentially defines who I am. I get that. So if you would question that or if you would attack that, then yes, you're attacking me. And in this case, Zophar pretty much is expressing that because Job does not buy into his understanding, it's like in some way disassembling Zophar's personhood. At least that's what it seems like, the way he's responding to all of this. Is you don't ascribe to what I'm saying, what we're saying, we know what's best, so therefore you are in some way, something like that. Yeah, that's right. I got it. This kind of thing. In the beginning of Romeo and Juliet, you know, that was a kind of that kind of thing. It seemed like it was like that. If that's what you're doing, if you don't agree with it, maybe something like that. All right, so then he gets to verse 16. We're kind of, well, we'll skip. We'll get down. Okay. Yet if you devote your heart to Him and stretch out your hands to Him, if you put away the sin that is in your hand and allow no evil to dwell in your tent, then you will lift up your face without shame, you will stand firm and without fear. Now, is there anything wrong with that? Seems to be good, right? It is good as long as you remember it's about grace. That, you know, yes, but we ought to have confidence before God, but it's not because we're perfect, it's because we're forgiven. But yeah, for their thinking, yes. Okay? It's true. If you don't sin, then you don't have to feel bad about it, right? No guilt. That's a good place. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, ultimately, that's correct. That's why they're just chafed. Because he seems to have a conscience that is not accusing him. That just bothers him to no bit. Yes. Oh, he's saying, look, if you'll just do this, you gotta notice, it's all about outward appearance. Okay? So he's saying, if you will devote yourself to him and stretch out your hands to him, if you put away the sin that is in your hand and allow no evil to dwell in your tent, then you will lift up your face without shame. Yes, that is accurate. That is true. You will stand firm and without fear. Yes, that's true. When you don't sin, you do. You feel you can come before God. That's the whole idea of sacrifice. That's why Jesus died on the cross. And he says, you will surely forget your trouble. So he says something really good. And then he has to take a step and say something really dumb. You will surely forget your trouble, recalling it only as waters gone by. Let me ask you a question. When you had big T trouble in life, do you look at it as being a defining, important point or significant event in your life? Or is it just something as the waters roll down the stream? So you can see in their theology, you can see what are they doing with trouble. Number one, trouble's connected to sin, so the one thing you want to do is walk on and not remember it. The target on you gets bigger. It's simple to have a system. But the problem is when something doesn't fit in your system, then what do? And Zophar, Bildad, Elihu, Eliphaz, I keep forgetting. Yeah, Larry Cohen, Larry Mullen Curley, there you go. Those three just struggle with anything that doesn't fit nice and neat in the way that they understand or want to position. That's the indictment. In no way, at any point, are we saying anything about the validity of what Christ has done or what God has done or how God has revealed Himself. What we're saying is that the problem is when people want to make it their system, their religion, that the issue becomes man tries to then define how it works and it becomes a man-centered thing and it's no longer God-centered. The beauty of this is Job knew his heart before God and God knew his heart before him. And Job was expressing himself from a point of relationship. And these guys are attacking him from the point of religion. Make sense? Yeah. He may have been too weak to do that. Very possibly. So there's things that are right about what Zophar says, but then there's all that incorrect part that goes along with it because it's part of the system. So he says there, you will surely forget your trouble, recalling it only as waters gone by. Life will be brighter than noonday. And darkness will become light morning if you just follow the Mickey Mouse pledge. You will be secure because there is hope. You will look about you and take your rest in safety. You will lie down with no one to make you afraid, and many will court your favor. They'll come back and they won't accuse you like we are. They'll worship at your feet. But the eyes of the wicked, But Job, and again, this is a veiled statement. But the eyes of the wicked will fail and escape will elude them. Their hope will become a dying gasp. And so how does Zophar see Job right now? Category two. Category two. Because he doesn't fit into his plan, into his structure of his system. Okay. So what do you think? What do you think about Zophar? They did good when they sat there for a week. Said nothing. They were good. So what are we learning about how we handle trouble? Or how we see trouble? How we endure trouble? So all these things that Zophar says that are really close to being right, and then even the things that he says that are wrong. What does all this say to, or show us about dealing with trouble? Does sin cause this kind of stuff? It can. But it doesn't mean that when you have trouble, that it's because of unseen, secret sin. I mean, if someone hurts someone else, is it going to have an effect? Yes, you could be found out and you could then be held liable. You ought to be, right? Your sin then, you know, just like some, you know, so many people, we don't like to talk about this, I guess, but there are examples of, there are people who have taken life, and then at some point after they've taken life, they come to faith in Jesus, and their life's different, no matter where they are, whether they're in prison or out of prison, and lives change. So, do they still have to live with their prison sentence and their guilt? Yes. Does that change their eternal destiny? No. Even though we don't like that. So it's true. Who sinned so big so that Wilmington got wiped out? Because that's about the way you got to look at it. Yes. And there are those that do make that argument. I mean, that's true. There are some people that make that argument. Ministry of presence. And it is about relationship. It's not about the system. We don't have to try to explain or point fingers. You know, truth is, when we sit down with somebody we really care about, if there's something on their conscience and they perceive that we really care about them, will they not tell us eventually what it is, if there is something there that they believe is behind? It's kind of been my experience. If we care about somebody well enough, there will be a point in time where there's an honest moment. And, you know, yes. Absolutely. 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 But I'm saying, relationship. It's relationship. It's not the pointing of the finger that causes change or brings about reconciliation or redemption. Maybe I learn something through my friend who's unexplained trouble and suffering. I don't have an answer for them, but I actually learn from them. I don't think Zophar went that far. Could be. Yes, it is. We don't like not knowing. Because if we don't know, we can't control. Goes back to something that Gail said earlier. You know, if we think we know, then we think we can control. And we feel comfortable. Brings me back. I don't know why. I'll close with this. But I remember, when I lived in, Regina and I just got married, we lived in Fort Worth in a not so nice part of town. And every night, we'd either hear screaming or gunshots or a helicopter that rattled the house because they had their spotlights going down our alley behind our house. And after you hear gunshots 2-3 times a week every week, you begin to realize, I'm not as safe as I'd like to be, Lord. How do you sleep? You have to say, okay, I'm yours, and the only way I'm really protected is if you do it. Because I've done all I can. You know, the rest is out of my control. That was how I had to deal with trouble. I didn't know else how to, I mean, do you ever get these, like, you understand it's above my pay grade. I can't do anything about it. Is there a real threat? Could be. Maybe not. Don't know. I could do something about the fire ant. But I couldn't do anything about the gunshot. All right, let's pray. Father, keep teaching us. Help us to understand how we need to understand your work when we engage and find that life brings us things we do not want. Lord, whether it's trouble in our finances or trouble in our health or trouble with all kinds of stuff like our houses or cars or work or whatever, Lord, help us to remember that the answer is in our relationship with you, and help us to hear your voice loud, much loudly, much more loudly than the others who might try to tell us. Thank you that you care about us enough to do that.